best to the top.
Welcome everyone to the Arc of Wrestling. I am Jeremy Lambert, joined as always by Steve Cook. Steve, it has been a while. Life has been kicking me in the ass, but we're back. We're here. Yeah. How you been?
I've been pretty good. Been chilling out, been living the life, been living the dream, if you will. Just doing things here in the 2001. Which is where we're actually at for this podcast. We're back in 2001.
We are. We've time traveled back to 2001 real quickly.
Thank God. You know, things were better. You almost hesitate to say that because what most people think about in 2001 is September 11th. This is all before September 11th, so I think we're good.
That is true. Real quickly, yeah, some housekeeping right. Housekeeping notes, I guess. I apologize for missing a week. I started a new job, and my schedule is one that I am not able to watch 2001 wrestling shows and take notes on them as often as I would like. So I'm super behind on things as I work towards my dream goal of not having to do anything and still making money. I'm not even close to that point because I'm having to do a lot more to make money, but it's still fun. So that's why there's a delay in this episode. And then moving forward, we're going to try to be back on our every other week schedule, but no problem. But thanks for
sticking with us. We're doing the invasion here for the next 15 weeks, so it's all right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we're going to drag out the invasion longer than WWF did.
Yeah, longer than they did. We're going to build this angle up. Yeah. We're just going to keep playing out. We're going to keep it going and going and going. And honestly, God dang, you know, it's in the angle that should have been going on forever and ever. We talked about it in the previous episode, WWF versus WCW. Is the dream scenario for all of us.
Well, where we left off with the previous episode, we reviewed Nitro, the final Nitro ever, which didn't feel like the final Nitro ever. It just felt like a special edition reboot episode of Nitro. Yeah. And then we were going to head in towards the invasion. But first, we got to get through WrestleMania 17 and the two-man power trip and Triple H's injury and Austin against the Chris's. And then we'll get to the invasion.
Eventually. Well, I mean, the thing is, with this whole WCW thing, the goal for WCW when they bought the company, they were hoping they could get some TV. They get some time slots for the shows. They're hoping with their deal of TNN at the time that they might be able to get Nitro on like Saturday night or some shit. They're hoping they get these guys their own time slot. That did not happen at this point. And I don't know if you remember why.
Nobody wanted to touch WCW.
Well, there's that. And there's also the fact that that Vince McMahon had already sold TNN a bill of goods on the whole XFL business. And when the XFL flopped, they were not going to give that man any more airtime.
Until today. He should try to bring back WCW now.
Yeah. Fuck.
CBS will put him on prime time every Saturday night.
I mean, seriously, the whole XFL thing kind of proved to network executives that if it's not the WWF, then Vince has no idea what the hell he's doing.
I can see that point, but it's still wrestling.
But it's different wrestling, and it's a brand that we both admit had a bit of damage put on it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Vince created a lot of that damage with WCW. Yeah. But the man clearly can't do anything else besides wrestling, and people will argue he can't even do wrestling today. But, you know, all of his other ventures pretty much failed. And yes. But he's always done wrestling better than everybody else. And WCW, whatever you want to call it, it was still wrestling. He probably deserved a second chance with that, given his wrestling track record.
The network executives did not think so. They tried to pitch them on the whole Saturday night business. You might recall back around this time period, WWF had a show called Excess. which aired on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
Which I was a loyal viewer of because I had nothing better to do on Saturday nights, being a loser in high school. I wasn't getting a whole lot of dates. I could stay home and I could watch Coach and Trish Stratus host the XS show because I had nothing else to do. And Trish, you know, Trish hosting the show, you know I'm down for that.
What is your favorite moment from WWF XS?
Well, I mean, you had the Trish Stratus era, and then you had the Terry Runnels era. And I think Raven was on there for a time as well, which is a little bit different. But I think my highlight from the XS years would have to be something that Trish Stratus did.
All right. Just something? Doesn't matter? Just what something she did?
The most recent episode of Raw I watched for this for this particular podcast had a match between Trish Stratus and Terry Runnels. It was not a good match.
The battle of the XS host, XS on the line.
It was not a good match, but my God, they were both on their A game.
I'm shocked 2001 Trish Stratus and any iteration of Terry Reynolds was a bad match.
And man, was Terry brought it, she was barely wearing any wrestling attire. Wow, it was something else. It was a good piece of business.
So also she was dressed normally.
Yes. WrestleMania X7.
A fantastic show that WCW watched from their skybox.
Yes. Well, their owner defeated Vince McMahon in a street fight.
Yeah. Shane won. Linda came out of her coma.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was your typical McMahon WrestleMania match.
I remember, well, I didn't really notice while watching the show, but I guess Vince had a cheap shot on Mick Foley because Foley didn't want to wrestle him, so...
Okay.
Vince decided to take a shot at him. Whenever Vince hit him, he hit him really good, apparently.
After WrestleMania, of course.
After WrestleMania, a lot of stuff. Yeah, a lot of stuff going on. I mean, you had Stone Cold Steve Austin turning heel, which
that worked. You know,
it didn't work. And I loved Stone Cold Steve Austin during that time period. I thought he did all he could to make that work.
He did everything he could to make that work.
He really did, but it really didn't work. People did not want to boo that man. The fans have stuck around at this point. And we've said before, they did not keep the WCW fans around.
No.
Those fans flew the coop. They were not sticking around for all this stuff. And the WWF fans were not exactly sticking around either. Quite frankly, the ones that did stick around, they were not buying in Stone Cold as a heel. That wasn't working.
Stone Cold was a heel. He formed the two-man power trip with Triple H, which, man, if Triple H had been healthy, I can't even imagine where that would have gone.
They'd still gone off, be Triple H burying everybody on the roster.
They'd still be tag team and world champion, yeah. Intercontinental champion today.
They would have the European title. They would have the SmackDown Women's Championship. They'd have everything.
Yeah. So Triple H did get hurt, though. Austin moved into a feud with the two Chrises, and that's kind of where we are here.
One of the Chrises got hurt, so yeah. There was also that. But that didn't quite happen yet. But, here we go. I was talking about Trish and Terry, and when you know it, they appear in this very first segment we're going to talk about.
We're going to jump. No, we're not. We have another segment to talk about first.
Oh, did I miss one?
Yeah. I texted you about this. May 28th Raw from Calgary, Alberta, Canada.
Yeah.
The show opens and Jim Ross says, we have received a letter.
Oh.
Or Jim Ross says, I have received a letter that states we will meet the Undertaker's wife tonight. But we don't know who the letter is from. That is the official start of the invasion.
Are we sure that this letter didn't come from the anonymous Raw general manager?
It may have. It came from the future. Everyone wants to credit the next man we're going to talk about for kicking off the invasion. No.
But it's actually this.
It is the anonymous letter sent to Jim Ross.
Now, was it... he didn't go into detail. Is this letter handwritten? Was it a letter that's made out of like magazine letters?
That's what Paul Heyman wanted to know. He said, "What the fuck? Who brought you this? A pigeon carrier?"
Yeah,
yeah. Ross did not go into details, and that would come back to almost get him murdered later.
Jeremiah known a little bit more than he's letting on there.
Yeah.
I don't know. And also, can you imagine somebody sending a letter nowadays? Who does letters anymore?
Email was a thing back then. He should have
sent an email. Does anybody send
a
letter? Yeah. Send us a shout out at SteveCook84 and Jeremy Lambert 88 if you still send letters.
Send us a letter to our home address.
For Twitter. Yeah, DM us and ask us for a home address.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'll give you my home address if you actually do this from this podcast.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
I actually have a P.O. Box account that I can route it to, so you don't actually get my home address. But
send us letters about the Undertaker's wife. Why not?
Yeah.
We'll get to know the Undertaker's wife throughout this podcast.
We will. Steve Blackman and Trish team up against Terry and Saturn.
Terry and Perry, if you will.
I wrote all four people in this match look physically outstanding. Saturn and Blackman were jacked to the fucking gills. And I mean, Terry and Trish are Terry and Trish.
Not a thing at this point, but
no. Not at all.
And Terry and Trish, as I wrote in my notes here, they brought their A game.
Yes. The crowd, or the end came when who else but Calgary, Alberta's own Lance effing Storm
shows up. Alberta, Canada. That's right.
He shows up. He super kicks Saturn. Blackman gets the win. The crowd popped huge for Storm.
Oh, they did.
I will say
they went crazy.
They gave him a hero's welcome.
They did.
Ross and Heyman were very confused on commentary.
They had no idea what's going on. Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
This WWE guy, what's he doing here?
And during the break, Storm and Shane were outside celebrating and leaving together in a limo while Vince yells at security because Lance Storm got by them.
I mean, it's true. They drove up as a white limo. I still think they should have driven off in Hummers during this whole
time. That would have been much better.
Yeah. If you're in WCW, you should be driving off in white Hummer.
Yeah.
And then later, that's what everybody associates with WCW. But and Vince's not too happy because how do you let Lance Storm get past security, for God's sakes?
I mean, Lance Storm, he's a friendly Canadian. He probably just was like, hey, you know, just let me in. And the security guards are Canadian as well because Vince chastised them and said, you know, I know you work for the arena, but tonight you work for me and you fucked up. Right. So
this is a perfect opportunity for them to do something with Lance Storm, with WCW in general, because you heard that reaction. WCW, Canadian fans always love Canadian wrestlers.
Yes.
That's been established throughout the annals of time. Anybody from Canada is getting a tremendous pop anywhere in Canada. They love these guys. And Calgary loved themselves some Lance Storm on that night. And anytime he's up there.
Later on in the night, we got a Peeping Tom video of Sarah combing her hair.
Yeah, buddy. Sarah fan?
I mean, she existed. Was I like, I her acting wasn't good. She was good to look at, but I wouldn't, you know. I would say, you know, Trish and Tori and Stacy and all of them were better. I think Sarah was much lighter in NXT, and so I didn't like her as much as the other girls.
Okay, Dave. Wow.
Nobody's going to listen to this podcast to care enough about to. That's fine. Yeah, somebody's going to tweet Sarah and be like,
Do you think Sarah the ex-wife of Undertaker has a Twitter account?
I have no clue. I really don't have a clue.
We'll find out through the course of this podcast, Chris. We're probably the only people talking about her in 2018.
Yeah, I mean, geez, we're going to be Sarah stalkers. We're telling people to send us letters about her, and now I'm
tweet to her and
making
see what's up
cracks about, you know, timely references, I will say, in the wrestling world today.
Can we just admit that saying that somebody has breast implants is not the same as saying they're fat? Can we admit that?
Can we just say they had breast implants? Like,
see, yeah, that's the other issue there. He was trying to skirt around the whole topic of the breast implants and just kind of dug his own grave.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave.
Just say she had a boob job. Come on.
Dave is awkward with words anyway.
He really is.
You know, it sounds
weird.
You ever
listen to him talk, you notice. Yeah.
It sounds weird to say that for someone who writes. For someone who does a million hours of radio and has written probably, God knows, 100 million words in his lifetime.
I'm just going to guess he doesn't do these shows drunk like some of us do.
No. Yeah, he's very awkward with words. So
it's just an awkward guy.
It is what it is.
I mean,
so,
he's a wrestling historian without peer, but
yeah,
God dang, you don't want to hear him talk.
No. That was the end of the invasion for May 28th Raw.
Yeah,
Lightstorm shows up.
A lot
and
of stuff, other stuff happened. I think that was the night that I think Austin faced Jericho. They did the whole screw job deal again because that's what they always do in Calgary.
Sure. I didn't watch the rest of the show.
Yeah, you didn't really need to. I didn't either.
June 4th Raw during a Kane and Christian match.
Yeah, Kane and Christian. Christian Kane.
A siren goes off.
Is Christian Kane somebody?
And the WCW logo flashes.
Yeah.
Humorous comes
Hugh
in.
Morris.
Fucking.
General erection, if you will.
Fucking kills Edge with a moonsault.
Oh my God, he really did. He killed poor Edge.
The crowd boos this.
Yeah, Edge got killed on this. This is bad.
Yeah, and Shane is in the production truck celebrating.
Oh, good for him.
That was the end of Hugh Morris.
He didn't do a whole lot else during this angle, except appear during one of Stone Cold's segments where he's saying what all the time.
Once he killed someone WWE had obvious plans for.
A man who would win the King of the Ring later on.
That was the end of him.
His high point was Stone Cold Steve Austin saying, "You are Hugh Morris." What? Is that supposed to be music? What?
Yeah. Or general erection.
Mm-hmm. But let's be honest, that's probably all he deserved. And then he eventually became a trainer that abused people, so fuck him.
The two top stars to debut are Lance Storm and Hugh Morris.
To be fair, general erection and Lance Storm made quite the feud going in WCW in 2000 when the Misfits were feuding with Team Canada. Come on now.
If you say so.
Remember Major Guns made the big turn against the Misfits?
I remember this
Canada feud.
I can't.
Are you saying I'm overstating the impact of the feud?
Yes, definitely.
I might be.
All right.
I might be. I overstated most things with Major Guns involved, I'll be honest.
Later in the show, The Undertaker
comes
out. Where
was Major Guns during all this, by the way?
I don't know.
Oh, she should have been around.
The Undertaker comes out and he calls out the person stalking his wife. Taker says this has gone on long enough. It's gone on
a week. It's only gone on for like a week. Come on now.
Well, Taker is a man with a short fuse. He ain't got time to fuck around with people stalking his wife.
Fair point. He's not the most emotionally stable person I've ever seen.
He goes. Taker's emotional range in this promo was something else. He came out all pissed off and was ready to murder somebody. And then he got just super sad talking about. You know, his wife being stalked and his family being messed with, and if it's Austin, he's going to kill him.
Yeah.
And then he turns his attention to JR, and he's like, oh, it started with you. And JR pleads ignorance. He doesn't know what's happening. Taker slaps the shit out of Paul Heyman. JR.
Which Paul probably deserved anyway.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
JR says you should talk with Vince. And then another tape plays. And Sarah is abusing her dog by spraying him in the face with water.
Yeah, that's not good.
I don't know what the point, like, I didn't like this video.
No.
What does this accomplish? She's on the phone talking to somebody and her dog's chilling and she has the hose and she's just spraying the dog in the face. Like, she's not trying to give him a bath or anything. It looked like she was just water torturing this dog.
Well, you know, I mean, water torture was a big thing in the U.S. America back in 2001.
Not to animals.
A fair point indeed. And I should point out that I never thought about this until right this second. But you might recall later in this year where Undertaker makes his big heel turn. You remember that?
Nope.
This is after all the invasion stuff. Okay, the final episode of Raw, I think, in 2001. They're in Oklahoma City, and you got to embarrass Jim Ross because it's in Oklahoma City. That's just what you do there. And they decide this the night that JR is going to join the Kiss My Ass Club.
All right.
Okay, so they get him in the ring, and Vince is down there. Undertaker comes down. And sadly, I remember all this stuff because it's something you can't erase from your mind. And Undertaker cuts this big promo about how he ends up saying that since he's a Kiss ass, that everybody should be a Kiss ass. And why does JR think he's too good a man to kiss Vince's ass? And he shoves his face in Vince's ass.
Okay.
Do you not remember this?
I remember JR kissing Vince's ass. I don't remember the Undertaker.
Undertaker was part of it. This is Undertaker's big heel turn, was him shoving JR's face into Vince's ass.
Well, the WrestleMania angle where Taker against Shane makes a whole lot more sense to me now.
Because Taker came back as Vince's enforcer. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I apologize to WWE for ripping the basis of that angle, I guess. Yeah,
because Undertaker is always Vince's kiss ass.
Yeah.
That's why he stayed there forever and ever. And he proved it by shoving JR's face into Vince's ass. And I did not realize this until right now that the genesis for all this was JR giving Sarah Stalker some airtime. There you have it.
All right. Who says WWE doesn't have continuity? Yeah.
Undertaker is justified for making JR kiss Vince's ass.
Who says WWE doesn't have continuity?
Long-term storytelling. That's what it is.
That's right.
God damn.
During the break, Taker confronts Vince, and Vince says, it's Shane behind the footage. You know, you saw him in the production truck earlier. It's obviously him.
See, may Undertaker still blame Shane for that.
Yeah. SmackDown, June 7th. The Stalker follows Sarah to the store. Taker goes after Shane, but for some reason, Kane intervenes and says Shane is telling the truth. Okay. Don't know why, but
don't know why, especially since later on we saw where Shane and Kane had a falling out.
Yeah,
with Kane electrocuting Shane McMahon's testicles.
That's right. June 11th, Raw.
Where are we gonna do that feud?
Never.
Yeah, I can't watch it again. I'm with you on that.
We should do an arc of just Kane.
Kane.
How long would that take us?
A couple of years at least.
Kane's had a storied career.
Of terrible angles, yes.
Yeah. June 11th, Raw. Shane reroutes Taker's anger towards Angle. And he says he has a history of interfering in marriages. It's a callback to our previous podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. Where Kurt Angle was in between Triple H and Stephanie.
He is quite the philanderer. That's true.
Taker confronts Kurt. And Kurt agrees that Sarah was lighter in NXT and preferred her that way.
Absolutely. Is that why Kurt Stephanie's attraction died off after she got the boob job?
Yeah, maybe.
Wow, there's just all sorts of storytelling going on there.
Kurt says he
didn't... Kurt's not a fan of the fake boobies.
No. Kurt says he didn't...
Although his wife might suggest otherwise. His ex-wife might suggest otherwise. Yeah, Karen. Yeah.
Kurt says he didn't find Sarah attractive when he met her, so Taker lays him out.
And that's a lose-lose scenario right there.
Yeah, another video.
I mean, if Kurt said he found Sarah attractive, it would have been the same result.
Another video plays, and the Stalker warns Taker, do not keep Sarah away from me.
Okay.
And there you go. That was all So we're 3 weeks into this angle, and we've got Hugh Morris, Lance Storm, and a mystery Stalker.
That we do. But you know what? This June 12th SmackDown in Baltimore, we got a bigger name coming up here.
Do we? I didn't write anything in my notes for this.
You didn't watch the June 12th SmackDown?
No, apparently not.
Oh, gosh. Did you watch the show? Oh,
I guess not if I didn't take notes for it.
No, you missed this one. This is one of the bigger names in WCW.
Oh, God. I'm afraid.
Okay. When you think Baltimore, what do you think about when you think Baltimore?
The Wire. Oh,
the Wire. Yeah. Okay, The Wire. What else do you think of? You think of the Baltimore Ravens, right?
Cal Ripken Jr.
Cal Ripken Jr., the Orioles. But you also think of the Ravens.
Sometimes.
And you might recall there was a WCW personality who started off as a Baltimore Ravens cheerleader.
Oh, God.
Stacy Keibler. That's right. That's right. She came out with Shane McMahon during a match between Test and Rhino. And they came down the ring. Stacy did some dancing on the apron. Rhino gets distracted because, well, it's Stacy Keibler. Why wouldn't you get distracted? And so Test kicks his head off, becomes a hardcore champion. And since Test and Shane were friends, going back to the whole lover lever angle, and they were still tight, it made some sense.
All right.
And Test would end up being a tweener during this whole thing anyway, or during part of it.
I'm super glad I did not watch this.
You're glad you didn't watch Stacy Keibler dancing?
I mean, if I want to just watch Stacy Keibler dancing, there are plenty of videos of that out there.
There are a lot of videos available.
Yeah, sure. I'm not too worried about missing that. So there you go.
You notice how I singled out Stacy Keibler dancing instead of DDP stalker angles?
Stacy Keibler, Hugh Morris, a mystery stalker, and Lance Storm are your four invaders. Yeah.
The four horsemen at WCW.
June 18th.
Okay, this is a big one here.
Yeah, June 18th Raw is where it actually does become a halfway big
it
angle.
Does pick up a little bit.
We get a recap of the stalker angle. Hardcore Holly comes to the ring, and the stalker cuts in. He says, "I'm in Tampa tonight, and I'm tired of playing games, and I will reveal myself."
So when women talk about how they hate men that play games, this is the kind of thing they're talking about?
I guess so.
Okay. I always wondered, like, anytime I am on the Tinder on something, the women always talk about how, oh, we don't like guys that play games. And I always wonder, what the hell are games?
You should put in your profile, "The only games I like to play are Candyland or something."
Shoots and Ladders?
Okay. Yeah.
I see it.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never been on Tinder. I don't know if that works.
You've never been on, okay. You've been on, we know you've been on Tinder.
Have I been on Tinder?
Yeah.
Oh, I have been on Tinder.
Remember that whole piece of business?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Well, I've never been on Tinder looking for a relationship or a hookup. How about that? Yeah. I've been on Tinder to talk to people about Tinder.
There you go. Yeah. Close enough.
All right.
Anywho, we're in Tampa.
Yeah, the Undertaker's music hits. The stalker comes out. He gets in the ring. He milks the reaction. He takes off the mask. And it is who else but Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, buddy.
Crowd pops huge for DDP.
Yeah.
And then they start to boo. Yeah. DDP says, "If you want to make an impact, you go after the biggest dog and you make it personal." And that's why DDP is going to return soon and slap Roman Reigns right in the face. Because you got to go after the big dog.
Oh, I'd be all about that.
Page says, "No one deserves to be more famous than him, and he's using Taker to get to the top of the business." And he says he'll be at King of the Ring, and he's begging Taker to make him famous. The premise is good. The stalker angle was completely unnecessary.
It really was. God, Paige did his best to try to put it over there, didn't he?
He
did his best to try to make it all
this
make
promo
sense.
Actually, yeah. Probably went too long. He did his best to, you know, keep it going and keep the heat going. Paige was fantastic here, but
he
the material, at least just the angle. If DDP just comes out, he just hits the diamond cutter on the Undertaker, and he cuts this exact same promo of saying, like, "If you want to get to the top of the business, you go after the biggest dog. That's why I didn't fucking attack Perry Saturn or Edge. Like, I went after the Undertaker." Like,
right.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
without the complete nonsense of Stalker angle.
Yeah, the mind games.
Yeah.
Playing the mind games by going after Undertaker's wife. And I think I mentioned before in the previous podcast that part of the reason we didn't buy into this is, why in the hell would DDP stalk the Undertaker's wife when he comes home to Kimberly Page?
Yes.
Like, that, seriously, come on now. Like, any WWE fan who's still watching this point would watch this and like, dude, what the fuck?
I mean, I guess if you want to try to justify it, you could be like, this guy is so sick and perverted that he's stalking another man's wife, even though he has a fine-looking wife of his own. But
JR was trying to put that over how sick he was while the fans were going crazy for him.
It doesn't make sense for just the character of Diamond Dallas Page, though.
No, he was never – that was never his deal.
He was never a sick and, like, twisted individual.
No. Even when he was a bad guy, like, in the mid-90s or whatever, that wasn't his deal.
I mean, maybe he was a sick and twisted individual when he was, you know, trying to take Kimberly's money or whatever that whole angle was. But,
well, that's more of a sick, twisted white-collar crime than a sick, blue-collar crime.
Yeah.
Two different realms.
Yeah, it just didn't work for the guy that we know who this guy is. Like, he has a very storied history. You can pull this shit off with Mark Jindrak or something.
Sure.
Like, no one knows.
Yeah, Mark Jindrak or...
Yeah, he'd been around for like a year or something.
Yeah, like Sean O'Hara, Chuck Palumbo, one of those guys be like a sick, twisted Undertaker wife stalker.
Yeah, DDP had been in the business too long, and we'd known too much about him, and it just didn't fit with his character at all. And
he really tried, though. God bless him. He tried.
He did his best, but this was doomed from the start.
Heyman called it the first shot conflict between WWF and WCW.
Yeah,
never mind the other shots of Hugh Morris and Lance Storm, which I guess is kind of fair.
This didn't work at all.
No, it didn't, and it would get worse for DDP.
It would get much worse. On SmackDown, Taker was waiting for DDP to arrive all night. Taker said he's going to beat him up the first chance he gets. DDP appears on the Ovaltron. He's at Taker's ranch, and he says he'll be at King of the Ring. So there you go.
Yeah.
King of the Ring, 2001. King of the Ring. DDP comes out. He opens the show. He says,
"Yeah,
I got more personal footage of Sarah that I haven't shown." He's got the private collection here.
Mm. That's be the next DVD to release.
Yeah. This is what I don't get. Taker said on SmackDown, "I'm going to beat his ass the first chance he gets."
Yeah.
DDP opens King of the Ring. Where in the fuck is The Undertaker?
Yeah, DDP was down at ringside for a long time here. He was just hanging out, chilling, watching the matches.
And we know Taker was in the building.
Yeah,
because
that was obvious.
Yeah, well, we find out later that they were stalking DDP all day.
Uh-huh.
So, whatever.
Yeah.
DDP says he's going to be in the front row. He's even got a sign that says, "Make Me Famous." Heyman interviews Paige, and then we get the footage of DDP sitting at a restaurant, and Paige does not find this
funny.
I've been
in the Waffle House. We're not sure.
Okay, he's sitting at a restaurant, and there's a camera on him. What? This doesn't seem like a big deal to me.
Restaurants have cameras.
Compared to, I guess he's just easily triggered. It's funny when he does it, but not when it happens to him.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of the Republicans are like that.
I'm not touching.
Did I just say that?
Okay. Not touching any political thing. Later on, footage is shown of DDP arriving to the arena. So there you go again. And he's mad about this too. Like, all right, it's footage of you arriving. We knew you were going to be there.
That's right.
Why are you so mad about this? And this,
I mean, they show people entering the building all the time.
Yeah. And this goes back to the point. We know the Undertaker is here. So why didn't he come out during the first segment?
When he said that he kicked DDP's ass the first chance he got.
Yeah. Finally, DDP does get in the ring. He calls out Taker again. It's revealed Sarah is filming Paige, as if you couldn't catch on to that. Taker finally comes out, slowly walks to the ring. He puts on his MMA gloves because he's serious about being the best striker in the business. Right. Although Brie Bella has now surpassed him. Taker beats the shit out of DDP. He no-sold low blows. He no-sold chair shots. I was honestly bored by this beatdown. It was so one-sided and comically bad, and it lasted for way too long that I was just over it.
It ended the feud. It really should have.
Yeah.
That should end it right there. Like, Undertaker's a better man. Okay. Yeah.
DDP finally just walks out.
It was bad.
The main event.
I guess they had a lot of time to fill in that show. It was all I could figure.
Yeah. The main event is Austin, Benoit, and Jericho. Booker T comes out in the middle of it, and he hits the axe kick, and then he slams Austin through the table. Doesn't matter. Austin still won.
Austin still wins, so it's pretty effective beatdown by Booker T there.
Yeah.
We should also mention that Shane McMahon, the owner of WCW, was involved in a street fight with Kurt Angle, where he got dropped on his head a couple times and thrown through glass. Man, that stuff's tough to watch in 2018.
Yeah. I didn't mention it because it really had nothing to do with the invasion angle.
No, it's just a feud with Shane Kurt.
Yeah.
I do recall vaguely, because I didn't bother to watch it, there was a promo that Shane cut against Kurt where he talked about the initials DCW. And he talked about what the initials stood for. And he claimed that C stood for cookie, which was good enough for him.
I was trying to come up with a WCW. Right, I was trying to come up with WCW stands for walk.
I don't remember the other ones. I just remember C for cookie. That's the only one I remember. Because just how bad it was.
All right. That's the end
great
of
piece of business there. Yeah.
King of the Ring. June 25th, Raw at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah. The hallowed grounds of Madison Square Garden.
This is where things really ignite this time.
Apparently, they can't run the building.
Vince opens the show and he says there was a rumor that if Jericho or Benoit won, they would defect to WCW. But that didn't happen because Austin won anyway.
Which, honestly, if you knew Jericho or Benoit, they wouldn't have won to defect WCW anyway.
Yeah, they left WCW. Why the fuck were
they
going
left for
back?
Good reasons.
Yeah. They tried to put the title on Benoit to get him to stay and everything.
Yeah, he still wouldn't stay. He still left.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Shane McMahon could convince him. He's like, you know, I'm not Eric Bischoff. A better opportunity here.
We're taking a lot of talking, I think. A lot of talking.
Vince speculates on what the T stands for, and this just reminded me of what the CM stands for.
Yeah. Oh,
Vince isn't good with initials.
He really isn't. It's almost as good as C is for cookie.
He thinks the T stands for terrible or trash or troglodyte or how about temporarily employed? Because that's what every other WCW star is. Says Vince's intentions are to put WCW out of business again, and he says there will be no WCW star tonight at MSG because this is the house that WWF built.
Well, you know what that meant.
Yeah. And we get a video package that verbally blows Vince Sr.
Yes.
And
Freddie
Vince,
Blassie, Gorilla Monsoon on there. Todd Pettengill is doing the voiceover, for God's sakes.
Vince guarantees more memorable Madison Square Garden moments.
That's right.
Rhino against Test.
There are some memorable moments.
Rhino against Test for the hardcore title. The 24/7 gimmick was still a thing here, just in case you were wondering.
Yeah.
Rhino wins with a gore into the tunnel wall. And here comes Mike effing Awesome.
Mike Awesome, of all people. Not that 70s guy.
No, just Mike Awesome.
Mike Awesome.
He powerbombs Rhino on a ladder. He pins him. He wins the hardcore title. And maybe the crowd popped. It was backstage, so if it was a big pop, you couldn't hear him anyway. Heyman and Ross sold this as the best they could. They showed multiple replays of this. And then 5 minutes later, Austin says, "Who cares? It's just the hardcore title."
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with that. You're trying to put that over as a big deal because it is. They said you got winning a WWF championship. That should be a big deal. But, yeah, you have Austin say, oh, who cares?
Later on in the night, Taker and Kane lose to the Dudleys, but Taker lays them out afterwards because you got to get that
because that's
back,
what
brother.
Undertaker did at this point in time.
DDP.
Undertaker is big on burying people at this point.
DDP got some revenge. He smacked Taker with the chair. Taker sold this way more than he sold the chair shots at King of the Ring. So
he must have been worn out after the Dudley Boys match.
Exactly. And DDP pulls out some of Sarah's extensions.
Yeah, that nobody bought that.
Shane McMahon is at WWF New York, and he says Vince is blocking WCW from airing on television.
Because he's terrible. That's why I told you earlier the reason they couldn't get WCW time slots was because Vince was terrible.
In a way, he wasn't wrong. Vince fucking up the XFL
exactly
did block WCW from getting television.
Mm-hmm. 100%
Shane says,
right there.
Shane says WCW will now start invading WWF as a result. Yeah. Isn't that what they've been doing?
Well, I mean, they're going to do it more now, obviously, instead of like one per week. And he also mentioned that he'll do what Vince did to his own dad and put it out of business.
That's right.
Which is something to come up later on as well.
Booker T gets introduced. The crowd pops for him. Chance's name. Yeah. Booker says, he tells Austin, I'll be at WWF New York all night long.
Remember WWF New York?
I wanted to go there so bad as a kid.
So did I.
And I never went.
No, I never got to go.
I remember in the old SmackDown games where you could fight all around like New York City and stuff. You could fight in WWF New York and in front of WWF New York. And there was this environment where it was outside of WWF New York and you could climb to like the top of it and you could throw your opponent off of the building and shit. And they do this like wacky super bounce ball bounce off of the concrete. And then, you know, they're up like 2 seconds later, no selling it and stuff. Back when video games.
Throwing people off of New York City buildings might be a problem nowadays.
It was all arcadey. It was fun. Back when games didn't try to be as serious as they are nowadays and were actually fun.
Yeah. I miss fun.
Austin and Vince are backstage. Vince says Austin should go kick his ass. Austin says, well, you're coming with me. And Vince says, well, why don't you take Angle with you?
Yeah.
And Angle agrees.
The APA. The old Austin, Angle, and Vince backstage.
Yeah. The APA give an inspirational speech saying how, you know, this is the house that all of you built. And meanwhile, Raven's there. Like, Raven fucking had a hand in this.
Well, it's, Johnny Polo probably called a match or two back in the day.
Maybe. It's a bunch of WWF jobbers and Haku.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the material was good. Like, Bradshaw and Farouk were very good in their delivery, and you...
They're always believable as locker room leaders.
Yeah, you wanted to believe everything they said. Yeah. It's just they're delivering this promo to Taka Michinoku and everybody.
Yeah, like Bob Holly was there.
Yeah.
Man.
Vince McMahon closes the show. He says he isn't happy about how the night is gone, but he promises things will end well. Cut to Austin and Angle arriving at WWF New York, and Booker and Shane are gone.
Yeah.
Shocker.
They probably should figure that one out.
Shane and Booker are at Madison Square Garden. Booker comes up from behind on Vince. Vince smacks him. Doesn't end well. Booker lays him out with an axe kick. The crowd boos. Here comes the locker room geeks. Way, way late. Where the fuck were you guys?
They're too inspired by Bradshaw for obviously.
Yes. Booker and Shane escape through the crowd. There you go. New York has been sullied.
They've ruined hallowed ground. Vince would say on the very next night.
That's right. We're back there for SmackDown.
We got a double shot. Remember, they can't even run Madison Square Garden nowadays, but they ran two times here back in 2001.
Brooklyn is the new Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not wrong. They literally just ran Brooklyn four straight nights.
It literally is. They're new. I mean, it is to them. Does anybody else buy it?
Yeah. opening segment is Vince coming out, and he says the Garden stinks because ROH and New Japan sold it out.
That's right. They sold it out. They've ruined hallowed ground. That's right.
Vince says he's keeping WCW off TV for good reason, and he's not ready for any. There's not going to be any invasion tonight. He's ready for it. Out comes Linda McMahon.
Yeah.
Because
anytime
what,
you want a great promo, you go to Linda McMahon.
What this angle needs is more McMahon.
God damn right.
She plays, she talks
this
about.
Is good, though. I liked how they showed the classic moment here.
She talks about the classic footage they showed the night before, and she says, well, what about this classic footage? And yeah. It's Vince asking for a divorce.
It's fair.
Vince says he's changed. Linda says if that's true, he will let WCW stars compete. And Vince says, hell no.
You know what? When Vince said he changed, the song from the South Park movie, I can change, popped in my head.
I'm going to put that in. I'm going to clip that in now.
There we go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what popped in my head when Vince talked about how he's a changed man.
All right. Linda believes that Vince is afraid of competition. I never got this narrative.
Vince thrived off of competition, actually.
I don't think he was ever afraid of it. He would just prefer to have it.
He didn't like it. I think, it's true. He wasn't afraid of it. He didn't like it. He just preferred not to have it. Yeah, which they still prefer not to have if you look at today, where they try to sign pretty much every wrestler under the sun.
Just wait until the Bullet Club is in WWE 6 months from now.
Yeah, and then you'll see every wrestler under the sun with WWE.
Good. I'm tired of paying for three different subscription websites.
Well, there you have it.
Just get everything on the WWE Network. I'm tired of paying New Japan World and Honor Club and whatever Evolve is, WWN. Costing me money.
You think Cody and the Bucks and them are all going to join a jump ship?
Did you see the report today with what Cody said?
He said that I saw that he said that they were on cahoots.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, but...
Yeah, apparently whatever the next decision they make will be all together.
Yeah.
They'll be all in, I guess.
He's building interest. I give Cody a lot of credit.
I think I like to run their own shit, to be honest with you.
I think they do too, but you know WWF is throwing a shit ton of money at them.
Yeah.
And
they have a shit ton to throw.
I mean, there's that... And I'm sure they do like running their own stuff, but I listened to Cody on Talk is Jericho today, and one thing that they all kind of brought up is when running All In, and Jericho mentioned the same thing with like running his crews and stuff, you know, they love doing the creative stuff, like, oh yeah, we can shoot this angle and book this match and stuff, but then they got company heads calling them and being like, you can't use this talent on this day. And, you know, a lot of legal lawyer stuff going on that, you know, they got to get the copyrights or whatever. They got to rent out the arena. They got to plan all that stuff. That's a lot of work to do. And I don't know how often they really want to do that. So I'm sure they do like calling their own shots, but you take away some of that. You're obviously getting compensated with money there. And then you don't have so much of the stresses of the non-creative wrestling stuff. I can see where they could just be like, yeah, let's go to WWE and just make a shit ton of money.
One of my favorite things I heard about that was Jericho. I guess Jericho talked to Vince about it, too. Like, they're chatting about, oh, they're going to do this in September. And Vince told Jericho, like, well, God damn, I wish they asked me. I would tell him never run fucking September.
Yeah.
He's just like, you'd die in September. I told him not to do that.
Well, Vince, maybe he should call Cody and be like, how'd you sell
Apparently
out?
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Ben should be calling them like, I just sell it September. In September, for God's sake.
Right.
good stuff.
So Linda suggests Vince is afraid of competition, and she says, how about at the next pay-per-view, which is Fully Loaded, we name it Invasion.
Yeah.
And it's WWF.
Well, Fully Loaded was done anyway.
Nah, it's WWF against WCW. And Vince agrees. I guess calling out his manhood of being afraid of competition got him to agree.
That's right.
Makes sense. The APA cut the exact same promo they cut the night before with all the jobbers and Haku.
Yeah.
Later in the show, Austin convinces Vince to let the WCW guys wrestle on WWF television. And he whispers the plan into Vince's ear, and Vince is like, that's a good plan. And the plan was that WCW sucks so bad they'll put themselves out of business.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think it worked.
Exactly what he said. He said they're so fucking bad they'll just run themselves out of business. And it's like, okay, let's do it.
Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo debut. They attack the Hardys and the Dudleys. This was awesome. And then the WWF jobbers came out and beat the shit out of them. And then O'Hare and Palumbo were just dead.
They really were. They looked really good there for a couple minutes when Sean O'Hare got to hit the Shauntan bomb.
Yeah.
They looked like $1 million.
They took out the top two tag teams in WWF.
And then everybody
time.
Ran down beat their ass.
Yeah. Tori debuts is what Not I wrote good. Down.
Tori Davis. You missed a couple parts here.
Okay.
You missed one. Okay, you missed a couple parts. Because I did note that Sarah did the interview of Jim Ross.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. I didn't note it because who cares?
Yeah, who cares? And Undertaker didn't care either. He had no interest in being there. So that was that. And then you had the Kane versus Albert no disqualification match for the IC strap. And Diamond Dallas Page came down, interfered.
Oh, yeah.
Gave Kane a diamond cutter, and the Kane had no idea what to do on the diamond cutter. It was terrible.
I didn't note any of this because DDP was just dead in the water by
this
point.
He was. And doing the diamond cutter at Kane, who had no idea what to do, it didn't help. Kane just, he didn't know whether to wind his ass or scratch his watch. It was bad.
Yeah.
But Albert wins the IC strap. Good old
man. Good for him.
Indeed. And Tori Wilson indeed does a pop-up. Yes. She wants to talk to Vince about moving over to WWF. That's right. And they're going to meet over the weekend, of course. So,
Main event segment. Austin calls out Booker T. Instead, he gets Taz.
Yes.
Taz gets his ass beat.
Because apparently he beat up Michael Cole.
Taz gets his ass beat. Booker does come out and he lays out Austin with the WCW title.
Yeah,
Booker T closing the show strong here in recent weeks.
Right. They're pushing Booker T at this point.
And it all died then on the next Raw.
Next week, July 2nd, Raw in Tacoma, Washington. When you think of great WCW markets, you think Tacoma, Washington.
Vince, Austin, and Angle open the show. It's far more about their issues than it is with the invasion. The invasion
is very fun, though. This is where you had the great jackass hero arguments. That is great.
If you put Austin and Angle on television for 2 minutes, much less 15 minutes, it's going to be great. Like these guys,
they got to try to hug. They got to have a contest over hugging Vince. Yeah, it's a good piece of business.
These guys are great. It did absolutely nothing for the invasion angle.
No, it really didn't. Hey, Shane came out though.
Shane comes out to try to get things on track here.
He also did a Sesame Street promo, as I know it here, but it's not the C for is for Cookie promo.
Shane says that tonight WCW
watching Lost Sesame Street at this point, apparently.
Shane says tonight WCW will get the main event, and it's going to be Booker T against Buff Bagwell.
Yeah, you know what?
The crowd
that
went.
might have been the flaw in Shane's plan, booking Booker T against Buff Bagwell.
The crowd went wild for this. They didn't.
No, it didn't.
This
said once that the Cleveland loved themselves in Buff Bagwell. Remember that? I think we talked about that back in the Nitro episode.
This segment highlighted everything wrong with the invasion.
Yep.
It's just from Austin, Angle, and Vince focusing on, you know, their love, power issues, whatever you want to call it.
Some romantic issues.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. From that whole thing to Shane coming out and saying, you know, the first WCW main event is going to feature Buff Bagwell. Like,
yeah,
everything. And if it's an invasion, why are WCW guys wrestling each other?
Well, I mean, we established on SmackDown that Linda wanted them to have WCW matches on SmackDown.
It feels like they're trying to tell two different stories here, and neither of them are good. The first story WCW is invading WWF, and they're going after WWF superstars, and they're going after titles.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah, which is the story they should tell, except they just don't have the talent to do it.
Yeah.
And the second story is WCW needs to be their own brand.
They need to have TV.
Yeah. And I that's not the story that you should have been telling here. Yep. But that's what they tried to do. None of it worked. This segment, it was great if you just loved the Austin Angle Vince stuff, which
is good.
Was great. If you were actually looking for something of substance in this storyline, it wasn't there.
If you liked Hero Jackass is good.
Yeah. Kane kicks DDP's ass, gets revenge for that botched diamond cutter.
That wasn't too good.
DDP just absolutely dead.
We should also note that there was a mole at this point. A mole within WWE. Farouk and Bradshaw were wondering who the mole was. And we also find out that since I didn't see Sunday Night Heat, that Palumbo and O'Hare were on Sunday Night Heat.
So good for them. They
went to WWF New York and appeared on Sunday Night Heat.
Okay.
I don't know if I ever watched it. I might have. I don't know. Is Sunday Night Heat on the network?
The mole thing came. I think so. I think they just dumped a bunch of stuff.
I'm gonna watch that at some point.
The mole thing came from the previous SmackDown where Shane was on the phone with somebody. We don't know who, and he thanks whoever the person is for the heads up about what's going on in the arena. Yeah, so
there's a mole. Yeah. There is a mole.
That's where it came from.
Freaking Bradshaw, if you look at that mole.
I guess we'll get to whoever the mole is. I don't even remember who it is off the top of my head.
We'll find out, I'm sure.
It's not Test, as we find out later in this show. Kane kicks DDP's ass. I did write down also there's a mole in the WWF locker room. The jobbers think it's Test, so they beat him up. It's not Test.
It's not Test.
Sergeant Slaughter.
They find out later on. Sergeant Slaughter revealed that later on with he said he was talking to Test during the whole Madison Square Garden business with Booker T and all that stuff. So we find out that that was not Test. He was just talking to Sarge.
Yeah, Test had, because of, as you mentioned, the friendship he had with Shane, and he also talked about possibly defecting to WCW. So
he had a conversation with Booker T in front of the Pepsi machine. Test says he could go if the price is right.
Yep.
So I mean, there are reasons.
I wrote down all throughout the night we get terrible skits with Vince and Tori. Steve Cook talk.
Well, I mean, Tori appears first meeting Howard Finkel. Remember Howard Finkel?
Who doesn't?
Yeah, the legendary ring announcer. They had a long, awkward handshake, I point out. Finkel just wanted to hold her hand for a long period of time. And then after the Crash versus Molly match, which that was a thing going on, she met up with Vince, and Vince wanted to get her in private so they go away from Austin, Deborah, and Angle. So they go to the shower. And Tori says she wants to be a WWE superstar so badly, she would do anything, which she says in the shower, I would point out. So Vince is pretty excited about this. But then Stone Cold Steve Austin pops up, and he seems a little confused by the whole situation. Like, why are they in the shower? I don't know. So they try to get privacy again. They go to a mop closet. not with Moppy, not with Perry and Terry. It's a mop closet. And when you know, Kurt Angle pops up and finds them. They just can't get rid of these guys. Crazy.
I just wrote, they basically do the same sketch over and over again.
Do you remember they go to the bathroom? Then they go to the bathroom. And I mentioned that Perry wasn't in the mop closet, but he was in the bathroom with Moppy. So why didn't they have Perry in the mop closet, for God's sakes?
Because Kurt Angle was not going into the bathroom.
Why wouldn't Kurt Angle go in the bathroom?
They do the same skit over and over. It's just so Vince can violate Tori in different areas of the arena.
It really, really, really is. It's so Vince can commit sexual harassment on multiple occasions.
Yes, that is the only purpose for these skits.
It's very awkward. You know what else is awkward?
What's that?
They had a segment on Chris Benoit getting neck surgery, and a woman was there with him. I felt very awkward watching that.
Well, I didn't watch that, so I didn't know about it until just now.
Yeah, I saw that. Like, what the fuck?
I was going to say what's awkward is...
Yeah, that is very awkward.
The main event. WCW banners are now all over the arena. Stacy Keibler comes out as the ring announcer. Arn Anderson also and awkward. Scott Hudson.
Heyman also said, like, hey, don't blame us if it sucks.
Yeah. So, Arn Anderson and Scott Hudson are the commentators. Regal comes out and he escorts Shane. He has security escort Shane out of the building. Shane leaves without issue.
Shane says that the promotion will always be about the WCW superstars. And I add,
We go to commercial break and Scott Hudson says, Buff Bagwell goes for the WWF championship next. This was doomed from the start.
You know, I want to put over Scott Hudson there for a minute, but that's not too good.
Booker T and Buff Bagwell is your main event. After an initial sort of reaction for Booker T, the crowd immediately turns on this thing.
I wrote that they have a match. It's what you would expect from the talent involved.
The crowd chanted, this match sucks. I didn't write down anything about the match. It was Buff putting Booker in rest holds for like 10 minutes.
I don't remember Booker T and Buff Bagwell having a big series of wrestling matches together.
Could you pick a worse person than Buff Bagwell?
No, I really don't think good. Out of all the people that they hired from WCW, probably not. I mean, even fucking Hugh Morris and Chuck Palumbo and those guys probably would have had better match.
It would have been better because I feel like those guys know their limitations. Buff is not only not a star, he thinks he's a star, and he wrestles like he's a star.
Yeah.
And neither are true.
No.
And, I mean, this is what we got. The crowd obviously didn't care because it's in Tacoma, Washington.
Yeah, not exactly a WCW hotbed.
No, and Buff later... You know what,
which is ironic, because we'll find out where the next episode of Nitro was.
Yeah, I was going to mention...
Next episode of Raw was.
Buff actually says the next week they're in Atlanta, and it would have made...
Yeah, you think that might have gone a little bit better for the WCW debut?
A lot more sense, but... they have a match. It's not good.
No.
The crowd pops fucking huge. You want to talk about all-time great pops? Steve Austin just coming out to interrupt this match is an all-time great pop.
Yeah, Austin Angle came down. They broke up the match. They start beating up Booker T. And then Buff Bagwell tries to help them.
Yeah, Bagwell...
It doesn't do much, and it's hilarious.
Bagwell joins in on this beatdown for... And
how
this
little he does is just hilarious.
And this again just goes, what story are they trying to tell here?
And Nick Patrick didn't even try to call for disqualification or anything. He just lets him go wherever. He doesn't care.
If you're telling an invasion angle, then why is Buff already turning? And this was just a confusing mess. We cut to the back and Vince is fucking caught with his pants down with Linda
in the laundry room talking about Mr. Mac Daddy. And I note that our main invasion build involves Vince getting undressed.
Yeah. And then we cut back to Austin, Angle, and Bagwell, they toss Booker T out the door. Don't let the door hit your ass on the way out.
Yeah.
Buff Bagwell.
And then you know what happens right after that.
Buff Bagwell is super excited. He thinks he once again thinks he's a star. And
you know where that's going.
Angle and Austin are like, who is this fucking geek?
Yeah.
And they knock him out. The crowd pops for that as well. And they toss him out the door as well. That's the end of the invasion angle, ladies and gentlemen.
Or WWE or whatever.
Like, yeah, that's the last appearance of WCW.
Last appearance of Buff Bagwell in general at this point.
That's the
TNA. I don't think TNA even bothered bringing him in.
I guarantee TNA brought him in.
Well,
for,
he didn't stay for long.
I'm going to look this up. They
brought
to wrestle.
Him in for one time. They saw him. He's like, huh, well, shit.
He had to wrestle a match. TNA, Total Nonstop Act, 2002, 2003, 2006. So they brought him in multiple times. Yeah, it doesn't look like he stayed very long. But yeah, the invasion died right here. It was never good to begin with. It was over on this night.
That's, you know what? Now I'm interested. I'm looking up Buff Bagwell's TNA history, and I see four appearances. And, well, three of them were, two of them were in gauntlets for the gold for the championship with him and 30 other people, you know.
Was he on the first ever TNA show?
He was in that gauntlet for the gold with Ken Shamrock and Malice and Brian Christopher, for God's sakes, and Jeff Jarrett. Keith was hanging around, Scott Hall, Rick, you know, all these guys.
Yeah, I ordered that show.
And then on the third episode, he had a match where he and Apollo lost to Bruce and Lenny Lane, the Rainbow Express. So, okay. Yeah. And then September 18th, they had another gauntlet for the gold. What the hell is this supposed to be? I don't know. Bunch of guys. And then May 7th, 2003, episode 43, it's Anarchy in the Asylum, a battle royal where Glenn Gilberti, of all people, won. The Disco Inferno, remember that guy?
Yeah.
He won against Bagwell, Brian Lawler, and D'Lo Brown, James Storm, Justin Credible, Kid Cash, Conan, Mike Awesome, Perry Saturn, Rick Steiner, Ron Killing, Sabu, Sonny Siaki, and Tracy Brooks. My good friend Tracy popping up in that match. How about that?
Those are names.
Those are names. Those are the four times that he appeared in TNA.
There you go. I knew he wrestled in TNA.
Barely, yeah. And you could see
if TNA wasn't keeping you around.
He was brought in to fill space and battle royals and gauntlets for the gold.
For TNA.
He was there to be a name.
TNA would have pushed anybody.
Yeah. If he'd done anything and there's matches to show something, he'd have been kept around, but he didn't. They just watch him there's like, don't need that.
This was the end of the invasion.
It was the end of the WCW invasion.
Yeah, and I think they knew it because what they tried next week, which we'll get to in our next episode, they had to try to do something. And when in doubt, more McMahon.
Do you want me to mention the SmackDown on July 5th in Tacoma? Also,
sure.
They ran two shows in Tacoma, for God's sakes. What the hell is going on here in 2001? You're running two shows in Garden Fine. Two shows in Tacoma? What the hell?
What happened on SmackDown?
Okay. Well, okay, I'll say it. It opens with replays of Vince and Tori in case you wonder where the focus of the angle was going.
No. I mean, I could have gathered that was where the focus of the angle was going.
This is also the episode where Austin bought everybody cowboy hats. And Kurt got a smaller hat.
Okay.
Okay, you don't remember that as well.
I remember it.
Kurt
had
the
happened?
Little small hats. He put it on his head and Kurt was
what
like,
happened
guy,
with
yeah.
the What happened with the invasion?
Okay, well, I should mention that... we had some referee drama. Nick Patrick and Earl Hebner had some
that
issues,
sells
apparently.
Tickets.
Yeah, yeah. He had Booker T walking through all the locker room tough guys, like Bradshaw, Fruk, all these guys. Booker T just walks down the hallway through all of them. And Bradshaw and Fruk seem somewhat impressed. Like, oh, okay, you showed up. So I guess they're trying to sideways put Booker over there. Scott Hudson, Arn Anderson came back, actually, believe it or not. And Gregory Helms. Remember Gregory Helms?
Yes.
He defended the Cruiserweight title against Billy Kidman. So I noted that they took away everything interesting that WCW gave him, like the Nitro Girls, the Sugar Shane thing, all that stuff. They took it away. And he's just now Gregory Helms, some bland heel jobber.
I'm sure the match was great.
It wasn't. Kidman won. He fished him with the reverse pedigree.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Then I have Vince taking Tajiri to the nudie bar.
All right.
I know what came of that. The APA apologized to Test for kicking his ass. He wants none of that. And then Austin Angle addressed the rest of the guys. Austin suggests they kick Booker T's ass. And then Angle kind of backs him up and says, you know what? Stone Cold sees Austin such a badass. He can do it by himself. And then APA and all the rest of the guys, they decide, you know what? That's a good idea. So they're just going to go to the bar.
WWF Unity. This Angle sucked.
We got DDP attending a referee. And then Austin is telling Kurt Angle to interfere in main event. So got kind of business there. We got Hudson Arn back. They're going to call the WCW championship match here Booker T versus Diamond Dallas Page. You know what? That probably would have been better on Raw.
It would have been much better on Raw if they didn't fucking kill DDP with this stalker angle.
Yeah. If Booker versus DDP without the fucking stalker angle was the first thing we saw, then yeah, that probably would have worked. But instead you had DDP attacking before the entrance ends, and you got the announcers pointing out the lack of response to it, and that didn't really help. DDP shoves him away, delivers a DDT on the chair, gets two counts. Undertaker comes out, and Nick Patrick does a fast count to give Booker T the win, which isn't exactly a great look. Kurt Angle comes out, attacks Booker T, and that doesn't go too well.
So who stands tall?
Booker T did there for a second, but then you have DDP luring Undertaker into a crowd of WCW people. And I point out that Mike Awesome is the only one out of all these guys that looks believable. Like, all these guys are trying to fight Undertaker, and Mike Awesome is the only one that looks remotely believable. Like, the rest of them just look like shit. Shane McMahon tries to break the whole thing up for some reason. DDP attacks Shane, so they're trying to build the angle there with the DDP against the WCW owner or whatever. Booker comes out to protect him, and then all WCW guys attack Booker. So I guess we're trying to build Booker and Shane as the baby faces against these WCW assholes, which didn't last for very long based on what happened next week.
As they invade WWF.
Yeah, we're trying to, they're trying to build, they're trying to do too many things. They're trying to do too many things that didn't work.
Rewatching this, you know, everyone says the invasion angle was bad, and they're right.
Yeah.
They're obviously right. I don't think you get an appreciation for how bad it is unless you go back and you rewatch it and you see all of this different stuff happening at the same time.
Yeah.
This,
you know, if WCW had a show, like, some of this would make sense.
This,
like,
is,
if they had their own show.
This is really what it comes down to, is they couldn't decide if WCW was their own brand or if they were an invading brand. And so they tried to do two things at once. The problem is the scope of these two things is so great and they're so contrasting that if you try to do them both at once, neither of them come close to working.
They did.
This angle is so bad, and it somehow gets worse.
I will tell you that the very first thing we'll cover on the next podcast is one of those nights that's unforgettable for me, because my power in my house was out for most of the day. I think it was a rainstorm or something, but I lost power for most of the day. And then when it came back on, it was towards the end of the show. And I saw some stuff going on that I had no idea. Like, what the hell's going on here?
And I was so confused. And I bet 17 years later, it still doesn't
make sense. I still wonder what the hell is going on. And I still wonder what the hell is going on here.
We will be back in a couple of weeks when the invasion gets extreme. With more McMahon.
Exactly what we need, more McMahons.
We will cover up until the invasion pay-per-view. We're going to dedicate an entire podcast to the fucking invasion pay-per-view. If I don't kill somebody before then. Sometimes these shows, you know, when we did the TNA WWF Monday Night War, and I had to watch all those TNA shows, that one, I wanted to kill somebody during that. And during this, just thinking about what I'm about to subject myself to, I want to kill somebody.
So. You know what, though? You know what? I'm just going to tell you right now. I mean, my general opinion is it's not as bad because Triple H wasn't there.
So on a scale of 1 to 10... of goodness. If Triple H were there, it would have been a 1.
It would have been a 1, but now he's not there, it's a 2.
But you're getting a 2 instead.
Twice as good, right?
Yeah.
There you go. Could you imagine Triple H was here? Oh my god.
They wouldn't have had an invasion pay-per-view.
That's true. Triple H just he would have buried them all in the first night.
Yeah. Triple H would have seen that Bagwell and Booker match, and it truly would have been the end of the angle when they kicked him out of the arena.
He would have forced the rest of the WWE guys to come out and get their asses kicked by him.
We would have never seen them. We would have never heard the words WCW again if Triple H were around after that match. They would have just dropped the whole thing and acted like it had never happened.
That's right. And we'd just be talking about Triple H.
And maybe that would have been better, honestly.
Maybe. I don't know, but next week we're getting extreme.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks to talk more invasion. Until then,
there's one positive about the extreme period we'll get to.
I don't remember what it was.
We'll get to it. That's a tease, brother. That's a tease.
Was it Stephanie McMahon looking bigger in ECW?
Okay, there are two things.
Well, that is two things.
That's my boob joke.
You can follow Steve Cook on Twitter at SteveCook84. You can follow me on Twitter at JeremyLambert88. TheChairShot.com, all your wrestling and MMA and other combat sports entertainment news. I don't know what's going on in the world anymore.
Yeah, column coming up there. It'll be up there by the time this gets posted, where I talk about Becky Lynch's heel turn. That's been a big topic of conversation.
Heel turn.
Heel turn with quotation marks. Yes.
Yeah. They're trying. They're telling stories.
They're trying. Becky kind of tried. I think she could do better.
Did you listen to her promo? It was with the gorilla position on YouTube.
I did not catch that.
Oh, that was the one where she was like, I feel like the redheaded stepchild, and you know, what if my hair was blonde, and what if I had breast enhancements? Is that what's going to get me a push?
See, that sounds good, but I stayed away from that because I saw the pictures and some weird, awkward looking guy with his head around with his hand around Becky's. Like, oh god, that's gross.
All right, you can listen to the video.
These weird
and then,
guys, try, you know, with we're trying to put them over, but we're also burying them too because they look gross.
You can watch or you can listen to the video. It's just the audio you need.
You can listen to it.
Yeah.
And ignore the gross looking
guy. You don't need to stare at the picture the whole 12-minute interview. You can do other things.
Oh, is that on there, Phil? Oh, God. That's gross.
It's a really good promo.
By her, I'm sure she did a good job. I'm sure the guys were completely gross.
Becky, much like DDP, very good at what she does. Just set up to fail.
Had a miscast.
Yeah, just set up to fail.
And Charlotte is just not the babyface that's going to work against.
Charlotte is not a baby face, period.
No, she's really not. And,
who wants know, to root and for...
And even if she's... And I've read the book with her and Nate, and I know that it wasn't all lollipops and rainbows for her growing up and whatnot. But the whole thing from wrestling fans, we're always going to believe that Charlotte had a hand to her, that she was born with a silver spoon in her mouth, because she's Ric Flair's daughter.
That is the wrestling canon there, is that that's what we're let. She came in and she immediately said, I'm genetically superior because I'm a fucking Flair.
That's right.
And she towers over everybody. She is a hell of an athlete. She is obviously
one of the most gifted females they've ever had in that promotion.
Yeah, she's obviously very talented. Yeah. She's attractive. She has blonde hair. She's very tall. She has the look. She has the talent.
Yep. So we're not going to buy her as a, a down on their baby face.
No.
Like Becky Lynch, who we know had to scratch and claw for everything she ever got. She wasn't born with Ric Flair as her father. She's in Ireland, for God's sakes. She's had to work for it all, and she's going to finally get this moment at SummerSlam with her and Carmella. And they decided to have Charlotte come in and take it. You can see why it happened the way it did. The real test is going to be once they get outside Brooklyn, if they get to some of these other markets where you can have Roman Reigns get cheered, There are places in the country that cheer Roman Reigns, that do things like that. And if they boo Becky Lynch, then it'll probably work. But, if they don't buy it, then, God, I don't know.
This angle is not going to go well.
I don't think so either.
And they've already proven that they're not smart enough to pivot.
I do think that she could take some lessons from her good friend Sami Zayn, who I consider the Becky Lynch of the Raw men, the men's division. Sami did a great job getting everybody to boo him by just being tremendously annoying.
Yeah, Sami at least was partnered with Kevin Owens.
And he even made Kevin Owens seem somewhat likable. And Owens is a tremendous asshole.
Yeah, they at least had a dynamic to play off of. Becky's dynamic is just a little bit different, I think.
Now, if Sami was around, now if they could have Sami pop up and maybe do some stuff. Maybe.
I don't know. I just don't think. It doesn't matter. They're going to get to...
Yeah, they'll give up on it eventually.
They're going to get to October, and they're going to all be friends in the name of history anyway. So, probably. Yeah, they're just going to forget about this attack and be like, "Oh, we made history together."
They'll be teaming up with Sasha and Bayley against Rousey and all our MMA friends. Yeah. Anyways, doesn't matter.
All right, folks, follow us on Twitter if you so please. Send us mailed letters about the Undertaker's wife.
Undertaker's wife.
Whatever you want to do. Well,
send us some takes on Becky Lynch and Charlotte Flair.
Yeah, sure. Read Steve Cook at all the places he writes at. I saw you tagged me in your latest hockey column.
That's right. I did a hockey column for Pred Lines where I talked about hockey. I actually mentioned you in my recent fantasy football column. Because about a certain podcasting colleague I have who prefers not to have to cheer for people that are playing the Panthers.
I love drafting fantasy football. I hate actually keeping up with fantasy football.
My take on it was that you would rather not cheer for Julio Jones getting 2 touchdowns, 100 yards against the Panthers.
Yeah, there's that too. I like cheering for my team. I don't want to cheer for maybe if I was in a keeper league, I'd feel differently. Because then I feel like I'd have the same team kind of year to year.
Yeah.
But cheering for just new players every single year. And yeah, I like my team. This is why when I play sports games, I don't do a fantasy draft. When I do a franchise mode, I start with my team because they're my fucking team. So I want to play with those guys and use them and cheer for them and trade them if I don't like them.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want me to join your fantasy football league, let me know.
Have an easy win.
Yeah. I will draft whoever you want me to draft and trade you for.
That's right.
Or if you just want an easy win week to week, that's perfectly fine too. I'm not playing for money because I'm not throwing away $5.
Dustin James' game.
Yeah, I know I just won't care after week one. So, yeah. All right, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with a more invasion.
So yeah. Are we going to do the invasion leading into invasion? Or are we going to do the invasion plus invasion? Or
we're going to do – this is an off-air question, Steve Cook.
It really is.
I'll talk to everybody in 2 weeks.
Yeah.